Jeremiah's perspective, it was prophecy. And these are some things that were happening when Nebuchadnezzar, in Jeremiah 29:21, he is called Nebuchadrezzar with an R, or Nebuchadrezzar. And let's see, verse 20, we'll start 20. Hear ye therefore the word of the Lord, all ye of the captivity, whom I have sent from Jerusalem to Babylon. So he's writing a letter to the people that are already captured in Babylon. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, of Ahab, the son of Kohath, and of Zedekiah, the son of Maaseiah, whatever that guy's name, which prophesy a lie unto you in my name. Okay, so he's exposing a preacher, naming him, saying the guy's lying to you. Several years ago in Colorado Springs, I was knocking some doors, came across an elderly lady trying to witness to her. She said, oh, don't worry about me, Sonny. I go to the Mass every day. And she did. I'm sure she did. Some people do. And I looked at her, I said, ma'am, they're lying to you down there. They're lying to you. She said, oh, don't worry about me, Sonny. Okay, I wasn't going to worry about her. I just didn't want her to get lied to. Okay, so that's what Jeremiah said. He said, them guys are lying to you. And these guys are saying, behold, I will deliver them into the hand of Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall slay them before your eyes. And of them that are, shall be taken up, accursed by all the captivity of Judah which are in Babylon, saying, the Lord make thee like Zedekiah and like Ahab, whom the king of Babylon roasted in the fire. So that's obviously happens in war when people get so animalistic in war, survival, that they have to drum up ways of how to kill people because the standard killing gets kind of boring. And, you know, which it's hard to imagine, but it happens. And during World War II, the Germans, when they saw what the Croatians were doing to the Serbians, the Germans were embarrassed. And the Croatians, who were Catholics, would report to the Pope and say, this entire community got in the church, Holy Mother Church. And the way they would do it is they would take the men out of the whole town and you tell them, either you join the church or we're going to kill you. And then some, they take the women and stick them in a house sometimes and then just torch the whole house. And they had a contest one night to see who can cut the most throats. Human beings. One guy cut over 1,000 people in one night. They called him the king of the cutthroats, gave him a watch. And this reported, this is information that Avril Manhattan has published. And he is not just making this up. He is quoting from the Croatian sources. So he's quoting from Catholic material of what was actually happening. So that's the idea here, where the king had these guys roasted in the fire. 23 says, because they have committed villainy in Israel and have committed adultery with their neighbor's wives and have spoken lying words in my name. So here we got the preachers of that day, the prophets, and they're committing adultery. And have spoken lies in my name, which I have not commanded them, even I know, and am a witness, saith the Lord. Okay, then he says, thus shalt thou speak to Shemaiah, the Neelamite, whatever, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, saying, because thou hast sent letters in thy name unto all the people that are at Jerusalem, and to Zephaniah, the son of Amaziah, the priest, and to all the priests, saying. So here's a jealous prophet of Jeremiah. He wrote a letter and he said, the Lord hath made thee priest in the stead of Jehoiada, the priest that should not be officers in the house of the Lord, for every man that is mad, crazy, maketh himself a prophet that thou shouldest put him in prison and in the stocks. Now therefore, why hast thou not reproved Jeremiah of Anathoth, which maketh him himself a prophet to you? Okay, now that is a common charge or slander against a Bible believer, where they say, well, so-and-so, he has made himself the prophet, he has made himself the pastor. But if you think about that, how do you make yourself do that? You cannot make people come to your church. You cannot make people listen to you. People have to voluntarily do that, no matter who they are. That's the only way to do it, is at the end of the gun. And so this is an accusation against the Bible believer. This is a common accusation. Jeremiah of Anathoth. Okay, Anathoth is his hometown. And this is what they commonly do. They criticize somebody. They slander them. And usually the religious crowd that does this, they don't have the guts or the courage to go and confront the man. So what they do is they kind of hide behind closed doors and yap at him like a little poodle. And then they try to get the public officials to come in and then do the dirty work. And it still goes on today. It's a common thing that happens. Okay, so he's accusing Jeremiah of making himself to be a prophet. 28, for therefore he sent unto us in Babylon, saying, this captivity is long. Build ye houses and dwell in them, and plant gardens and eat the fruit of them. And Zephaniah the priest read this letter in the ears of Jeremiah the prophet. Okay, Jeremiah told the people, you're going to be there 70 years. So plant gardens, build houses. You just better settle down. You're going to be there 70 years. And these other guys are saying, oh no, it's only going to be 2 years. Now the previous chapter, I think it was the previous one, 28. Yeah, was that one guy named Hananiah that said, 2 years, within 2 years, all the furniture's coming back from the tabernacle. And Jeremiah said, well, guess what? You're going to die this year, feller. And he dies within 2 months. Now, that's a pretty effective illustration. Now, how could Jeremiah do that? Could they blame him for that? People are kind of funny. Remember that story where Korah came and was upset with Moses and Aaron, saying, you guys made yourselves prophets. And Moses said, oh, we did? Well, let's ask God about this. And then they pulled that rod out, and they had the butted rod and everything. Well, in Numbers 16, Moses said to the Lord, he said, I'd like you to destroy these people. He said, I don't want you to do the usual technique. I'd like you to do something different. How about if the earth opens up his mouth and then swallows him up and takes him right into the pit? So that's what happens. And then everybody's mad at Moses, like he's the one that did it. Like he had a remote control door opener that he could push it open up the earth. Well, the ones that got mad about it, then the Lord torched them with fire from heaven. You know, Moses couldn't have done that. You know, he must have had an awesome remote control to make that Red Sea part, make the earth open up. Tremendous things that he could do. Okay, this is a common thing that they say about him. Okay, verse 30, then it says, then came the word of the Lord unto Jeremiah, saying, send to all them of the captivity, saying, thus saith the Lord concerning, there's that fellow that wrote the letter, because that Shemaiah hath prophesied unto you, and I sent him not, and caused you to trust in a lie, therefore, thus saith the Lord, behold, I will punish Shemaiah, the Nehelamite, and his seed. His children get punished too. He shall not have a man to dwell among this people, neither shall he behold the good that I will do for my people, saith the Lord, because he hath taught rebellion against the Lord. So now anybody that sits back and watches the program can see, okay, Jeremiah said this, this guy said this. Time usually tells who's right. And that's the thing we do. We just wait on God. Wait on God. And that takes faith. That takes faith in our part. Luke chapter 18. I remember this story about the widow lady that went to the judge, and she kept pestering the judge and kept pestering the judge and kept pestering the judge. And the judge said, "Man, this lady's going to wear me out." And then it says in Luke 18:8, it says, "When the Son of Man cometh, shall he find faith on earth? So the idea is that as far as vengeance goes, we leave that strictly up to God. We pray about it, give it up to God. Now, if it's a legal thing, then we can fight it the best we can through the court systems, but we still trust God. We still trust God through those things. And if you live long enough, you will see what God does when he brings his vengeance down, and he's never in a hurry, but when he does bring it down, if you have a compassionate heart, you actually feel sorry for the person. You wouldn't wish that on your enemies. But the Lord does these things. And it gets to the point, the more you live and the more these things you experience, when somebody slanders you, you don't get upset about it. You just say, "I wish you hadn't have said that. Not for my sake, but for your sake." Okay, so that's 29. Chapter 30. Chapter 30 gets into the prophecy of Jacob's trouble. Jacob's trouble, this is what it's called in Jeremiah 30, verse 7. We know it also by the words, the tribulation. It's also known in the Bible what is called Daniel's 70th week. Okay, it's called Jacob's trouble, not the church's trouble, so thank God we don't have to be concerned about the tribulation itself and look for the mark and the Antichrist and all that stuff, because we'll be raptured out of here, which is a great blessing. People say you don't believe in the rapture and all that stuff. Well, I had a guy say that to me one time. He was going to watch some of the videos we had, and I gave them to him, and he brought them back the following weekend, or 3 or 4 days later, and I asked him if he watched them videos. He said, "No, it looked like it was them pre-rapture videos, and I didn't really want to watch them." And I said, "Oh, so you believe you're going into tribulation?" He said, "Yeah, I don't want to." I said, "Well, you don't have to." He said, "Well, it's just what you think." I said, "Well, good luck, feller." He was a smart aleck anyway, so that's how I handled him. There's a couple from over by, what town's that? I can't remember. It's about an hour, 15-minute drive from there to Rensselaer. And they sent me, like, newsletters of what they believed, and they said they're not welcome in any churches. And so I read through some of it. And I saw that they were off in a few areas. They didn't believe, they thought they were going to go into tribulation. And they asked if they were welcome to come to our church. I said, "Sure. I don't care." And they came two Sundays. After two Sundays, they never came back. She wrote me a letter, the wife did, stating that I thought you were a Bible believer. And basically said that I wasn't a Bible believer because I believed in the rapture. And went on and on. And the Bible, she would take 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 3, where it says there comes a falling away first and the man of sin be revealed. So she believed that the rapture doesn't take place until a man of sin is revealed, meaning the Antichrist. And I wrote her, I said, "It's amazing how much Bible you learned from me in two Sundays that you figured out all that I believed. And besides, the man of sin has been revealed. If you would have continued coming, you would have found out who it is, but I ain't telling you now. And if you're right about the rapture occurring in the sometime in tribulation, I'll figure that out when the Antichrist shows up. But when I'm right, you'll be pleasantly surprised." So it's not that big of a deal to me when a person believes it. And I just believe it because I believe it upholds the integrity of the Scriptures. And that's some things I believe just for that reason. just because it upholds the integrity of the Scriptures. Like people getting upset that you believe in the Old Testament, they get saved by faith and works. They get upset all about that. I just believe that because that's what the Bible says. That looks like that's what it says to me. And besides, it doesn't affect us. It's Old Testament. But some people, it's a big deal. Some people, you gotta agree with them on everything, or else they're gonna take their ball and go home and play. And to me, that's a sign of immaturity. Okay, Jeremiah 30, verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, "Thus speaketh the Lord God of Israel, saying, Write thee all the words that I've spoken unto thee in a book." Okay, this book is known as the Verbally Inspired Original Autographs. By the conservative scholars, by the liberal scholars, they don't believe it's anything. So he's got a book there. And then in this book it says, "Lo, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will bring again the captivity of my people Israel and Judah, saith the Lord. And I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it." Okay, who's Israel and Judah? Well, the British Israelites say it's them. Well, then who's Judah? Well, they say that's the Jews. They still got a problem. Okay, they're going to possess their land. Obviously, this right here is called the National Restoration of the Nation of Israel. And anybody that was born before 1948 witnessed, if you can remember it, one of the greatest miracles since the resurrection of Jesus Christ, and that is the resurrection of the nation of Israel in 1948. Now, obviously, it hasn't been complete, and they haven't lived, they're not living in their land peaceably, but they will, according to the Scriptures in many places. Okay, verse 4, "And these are the words that the Lord spake concerning Israel and concerning Judah, for thus saith the Lord, We have heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask ye now and see whether a man doth travail with child. Wherefore do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail, and all faces are turned into paleness." They're scared to death. Everybody's scared. Everybody's frightened. Everybody's afraid. Why? Because of verse 7. "Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it." Okay, there's Jacob's trouble. That is known as the tribulation. It's also called in Daniel 12, verse 1, the time of trouble. Okay, so the 7-year tribulation is a 7-year spanking or punishment placed upon the nation of Israel. It's called Jacob's trouble. It's not called the church's trouble. That's a great hope that we have, looking for our blessed hope. Okay, so this is called the time of trouble. Nehemiah 1 verse 7 says that the Lord is a present help in a time of trouble. And when you go through the Psalms, the book of Psalms, and you see through these different Psalms, whenever you find the word trouble in there, in most cases, it's a reference to the tribulation. Whenever you find the word Selah in the Psalms, again, it's the same thing. It's a reference to the tribulation and or the second coming. So we have Jacob's trouble mentioned several places throughout the Bible, called the tribulation, called Daniel's 70th week. Daniel chapter 9, verse 24. There are 70 weeks determined there, and there's 1 week remaining. So it's called the 70th week. 1 week meaning 7 years. Okay, and it's obviously a distinction between the church age and the tribulation. There are clear distinctions between these. And that's what the book of Hebrews is for. Hebrews reveals the doctrine for the Jews in the tribulation. Hebrews is a famous book that's often used for people who believe they lose their salvation. Hebrews 3, verse 6 through 14. The famous Hebrews 6, 4 through 6. That's the famous one. That will be the bedrock verses for people who believe they can lose their salvation. And then Hebrews 10:26 is another one. Those verses, if you ever deal with a charismatic or a water dog, those are the verses they're going to bring up. But yet the book is written to Hebrews. How can a Gentile Christian apply literature that is written for the Hebrews to himself? And that's where when I read Ruckman's commentary in Hebrews, that thing was such a blessing to me, because now I have the answers for all these people that believe they can lose their salvation when they threw their verses at me. I had enough fear in the Bible in my heart that I knew I couldn't change the words and get away with it. And on the way home, I knew that they had me, but I knew that they weren't right, but I didn't know the answer. I remember in Colorado Springs one time, I got dealing with a Seventh-day Adventist. And he threw that one in Hebrews where it says, "Cast not away your confidence." And I thought, oh, no. First time I came across that one, that, you know, really hit me in the face. And I don't know, somehow I weaseled out of it at the time. But on the way home, I knew in my spirit I didn't have the answer. And I never did get the answer for many years later. And I got the answer when I went through that commentary. And then it hits you. It's so simple. Sometimes it's just so simple we miss it. Why didn't I look at the title of the book? Hebrews. And that's the thing about truth that's wonderful, is that when you get it, it's so plain, you just go like this, say, why didn't I see that before? And that's what's beautiful about the Bible, how it's written. It's written in a chronological sequence as far as doctrine goes. And so when we can see these things, it just makes the Bible come alive, and it helps us relax completely in the Scriptures. I remember reading Curtis Hudson's little book. He has a little booklet. You know, remember them Sword of the Lord little booklets that they have? Just a little one spot like this. And they're usually a sermon. They put them in. And many of them are very good. And he had one on Hebrews 6, 4 through 6. Somebody gave it to me, read it. And I tell you, you know what? He handled those verses almost identical to the way that Jehovah's Witness would do. He ran to the Greek to change it, to make it match what he believed. He came to the conclusion in Hebrews 6, 4 through 6, that that was a final rejection of Jesus Christ by a sinner. Where it doesn't even say that. It doesn't even come close to saying that when you read those verses. So it's the Bible is amazing how it's written, where it's a two-edged sword, that it's written to save, but if a man doesn't want to get it, it's written to deceive too, or destroy. Okay, so verse 7, that's kind of one of those, verses, you know, kind of red highlighted. Jacob's trouble, a time of Jacob's trouble. Matthew chapter 24, verse 21, mentions the great tribulation. As my reference Bible and through that thing, I'll be putting this Jeremiah 30, verse 7. It's a common reference used throughout it. And there are some references like that in the Bible where you just keep going back to those references because they seem to be like a real cornerstone of a verse that just kind of sticks out there. Verse 8, it says, "And it shall come to pass in that day," usually when you see something like that, second coming, "in that day," what day? A specific day. Not a 24-hour day, but maybe a time period referred to as a day, or they say in his days. "Saith the Lord of hosts, that I will break his yoke from off his neck and will burst thy bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him. But they shall serve the Lord their God and David their king, whom I will raise up unto them." Now there's a lot said there. Verse 8. Break a yoke off them. Well, you see, they're going to be slaves. They have forgotten that Abe Lincoln, you know, had the Emancipation Proclamation. And they're going to be slaves. Jews are going to be slaves in the tribulation. They're going to be in prison in the tribulation. Strangers. Who are strangers? In the Bible, strangers are foreigners. Anybody who's not a Jew is a stranger. Look in Ephesians 2, verse 12. You and I would be considered strangers. Ephesians 2, verse 12 is probably the best definition, or the clearest, I should say. Strangers are going to serve themselves of the Jews. So what they're going to do is they're going to arrest them. They're going to take their children. They're going to enslave them, make them work for them. They're going to take their property through the court systems. And they're going to make them take care of their own property by fraud. James 5, verse 4. Okay, Ephesians 2, verse 12. That at that time ye were without Christ, being aliens from the commonwealth of Israel, and strangers from the covenants of promise, having no hope and without God in the world. Okay, so we are strangers to the commonwealth of Israel. Okay, so in Jeremiah 30, verse 8, strangers are going to serve themselves of the Jews. Look, if you would, in Joel chapter 3. Joel chapter 3, verse 2 and 3, where it says that they will have Jewish children as slaves, and they will be selling them to satisfy their perverted lust. Joel chapter 3, verse 2 is commonly known as the judgment of the nations. Goes with Matthew 25. And it says, and I will also gather all nations, and will bring them down into the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them there for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. And they have cast lots for my people, gambling, and have given a boy for an harlot, and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. You say, how can they get that way? Well, people get sick of Jerusalem. Look in Zechariah, I think it is Zechariah 12. See if I can find it. Yeah, Zechariah 12:3. Dad gave me a tape from Brother Modlish. Brother Modlish is a good man in Washington, state of Washington. And he preached a message when Dad was out there, Dad and Mom were out there. And it was about Jerusalem being a burdensome stone. And I got some good information out of that. In fact, I went back to Zechariah and put a little footnote in there. It helped out. But Jerusalem is going to become a burden to the world. Zechariah 12, verse 3. It says, and in that day will I make Jerusalem a burdensome stone for all people. Getting there, but you see, so far, outwardly, America is still on their side. But there come a time when we get sick of it. Okay, and it says, all that burden themselves with it shall be cut in pieces, though all the people of the earth be gathered together against it. Okay, so they're going to constantly, the Middle East thing's going to be keep stirred up. And in tribulation, it's going to get so stirred up that everybody who watches the news says, I am sick of hearing Jerusalem. I don't want to hear that ever again. See, that's one of the tools of the news media. They just keep beating you with it. And they keep hitting you about Clinton and the scandals. So everybody turned a deaf ear to it. Let's just get over it. And that got them out of the scandals. So they're going to keep pushing this thing on Jerusalem. Jerusalem, this. Bombings here. Suicide here. Bombings here. Fighting about this. Middle East peace. And people are going to say, just forget them people. Why don't they just give it to the Arabs? Just give in to them. And of course, that's what will be during the tribulation. And anybody that helps them, that gets caught helping them, the Antichrist kills them. So they have a choice, either getting killed by, caught and killed by the Antichrist for helping the Jews and being blessed by God, or they get blessed by the Antichrist for killing the Jews and they get cursed by God. So this is Zechariah 12:3. We can see it's building up to this. So it's a great evidence of the second coming. Okay, so strangers. I'll look at Psalm 79. That's what I want to mention, too, about them being in prison. Psalm 79. Psalm 79, the first four verses is what's going to take place in the tribulation in Jerusalem. It says, O God, the heathen are come into thine inheritance. Thy holy temple have they defiled. They have laid Jerusalem on heaps. The dead bodies of thy servants have they given to be meat unto the fowls of the heaven, and flesh, the flesh of thy saints unto the beasts of the earth. The blood, their blood, have they shed like water round about Jerusalem, and there's none to bury them. What? That's hard to imagine, isn't that? Okay, drop down to verse 11. While they're in jail waiting for their execution, it says, verse 11, let the sighing of the prisoner come before thee. According to the greatness of thy power, preserve thou those that are appointed to death. So they're asking for God's mercy. Will they get it? Well, in the long run, yes, but they may get killed. So that, to me, is such scientific evidence that the Bible's true. How can anybody logically and reasonably answer the questions about the Jews? Why do Jewish people play such a prominent role in world history? You go to the courts, like in big cities, why is it that Jews seem to be always in the middle of those places? They're always there. You see, and when you watch a tele program and at the end it has the names coming down, isn't it amazing the Bernsteins, the Goldsteins, and all this stuff through there? That's just fascinating. Israel is not one-fourth the size of Indiana, yet it plays a prominent role. That's amazing. Yeah.
There's more Jews in the state of Florida than there is in Israel altogether.
Probably. Yeah, it's just amazing. Just amazing. The endurance those people have. Now, the thing is in America, you know, you got the patriots where they're preaching against the apostate Jews, and I do believe we should, apostate Jews, but there's still a Jewish remnant that the Lord's going to save. And these guys are getting anti-Semitic, and of course that's fulfilling prophecy, because Jerusalem is becoming a burdensome stone to people. Okay, Jeremiah 30, let's see, verse 9, it mentions that David's going to be their king. That's the same David that's in the Old Testament. In essence, he's not only going to be, he's like a second king, or a prince, shall we say, under the King of Kings, Jesus Christ being the King of Kings, but yet David himself is going to rule as a king also. In Jerusalem, that's not the only place of that occurrence. Let's see. Run down. Ezekiel 34, 23. That's where it mentions that David will be a king. And Hosea 3, 5. So there's two other places. So you have three verses. Ezekiel 34, 23 and Hosea 3, 5, where it mentions that David himself will be a king in Jerusalem during the millennium, the Lord Jesus will sit on the throne of David. Jesus will be the King of Kings, but yet David, you know, sort of like a mayor of Jerusalem or something like that, but yet considered a king. Okay, at the paragraph mark of 30, verse 10, he says, "Therefore, fear thou not, O my servant Jacob, saith the Lord, neither be dismayed, O Israel, for lo, I will save thee from afar, and thy seed from the land of their captivity, and Jacob shall return and shall be at rest, and be quiet, and none shall make him afraid." Obviously, we know that has not been fulfilled. He said, "For I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee, though I make a full end of all nations, whither I have scattered thee. Yet will I not make a full end of thee, but I will correct thee in measure, and will not leave thee altogether unpunished." Okay, that correction is doctrinally written about in Hebrews 12. And that's going to be the seven-year correction or punishment. Obviously, they've been getting it ever since Matthew 27. But yet, as far as really getting corrected and killed and everything, that's what the tribulation is about. Okay, verse 12. "For thus saith the Lord, thy bruise is incurable, and thy wound is grievous. There is none to plead thy cause." There's our courtroom setting. None to plead thy cause. Psalms 94, verse 20 mentions that the Antichrist, the workers of iniquity, they frame mischief by a law. Well, doesn't that sound familiar? Frame mischief by a law. And then the techniques of the workers of iniquity are laid out. Whenever you type up workers of iniquity, it occurs 21, 22 times in the Bible. And you'll see that their techniques of stealing property from people will be through the court system. That's why he said there's none going to plead their cause. That's why he promised them in Luke 12 that when you're in court, don't you worry about what you're going to say. I'm going to give you the words right on the spot. Now, we don't have that promise. It'd be nice that God give us that promise. And maybe before you go in court, read that verse and say, "Lord, would you please jump the dispensation and give me that promise?" And the Lord sometimes does. He did for that woman of Canaan. Okay, but even at that, he told that to the Jews. Why does he give them that promise? Well, they only got 7 years. They're not going to have time to study. We got to take the time. And it doesn't mean they're going to get out of their court problems. It's just that they're going to witness through the court proceedings. And they're going to make the judge look like, "I know that I'm murdering this person." They're going to bring them in complete judgment. Okay, so they're going to, James 2, verse 5 and 6 mentions about the rich. The rich bring them to court, and they judge against them. And, of course, that's when you study the United Nations, you'll see that they have a world court now, and they're trying to bring cases in front of the world court from these people who have absolutely no authority over anybody, but yet people think it's... And most courts are like that in our country, where technically they have no lawful authority over anybody. But yet they just keep hammering at it. Okay, so they said, "There is none to plead thy cause, that thou mayest be bound up. Thou hast no healing medicines. All thy lovers have forgotten thee. They seek thee not. For I have wounded thee with the wound of an enemy, with the chastisement of a cruel one, for the multitude of thy iniquity, because thy sins were increased." The sins of Judah, the sins of Israel. "Why criest thou for thine affliction? Thy sorrow is incurable. For the multitude of thine iniquity, because thy sins were increased, I have done these things unto thee. Therefore, all they that devour thee shall be devoured." Is that figurative? Could be. But there are a lot of verses that shows that that could be literal. Devoured as in eating them. Verse 16, that phrase, "The Lord will use heathen nations to judge his people, but then he'll turn around and judge the heathens for picking on his people." Okay, so he says, therefore, all that devour thee, as in a temple sacrifice, eating somebody, and all thine adversaries, every one of them, shall go into captivity, and they that spoil thee shall be a spoil. What goes around comes around. And all that prey upon thee will I give for a prey. And I will restore health unto thee, millennial. See how quick he jumps from the tribulation to the millennium? 17, tribulation. 18, millennium. He jumps right in there. For I will restore health unto thee, and I will heal thee of thy wounds, saith the Lord, because they called thee an outcast, saying, this is Zion whom no man seeketh after. Okay, so there's that wording, outcast. You'll find that often throughout there, the outcast. Look, if you would, in Isaiah 16, verse 3 and 4. Isaiah 16, verse 3 and 4. The outcast, the Jews, I will cast you out. I think that's 13 times found in Jeremiah. If I remember right, I think that's what his name means. Isaiah 16. Okay, the outcast, where they are supposed to run, where they're supposed to try to get to hide. Not too many of them will get there, but they're supposed to try to get there, is a place called Petra, or Sela, Sela Petra. Today, it's a place that today it's in a modern nation called Jordan, and today it's like it can be a tourist place, but Jordan don't like too many people come around there. And this is Isaiah 16. Whenever you find the word Selah through the Psalms, this is what it's a reference to. Isaiah 16, 1, send ye the lamb to the ruler of the land from Selah, to the wilderness, unto the mount of the daughter of Zion. Okay, this is often also called the Rock City. The Rock City. It's interesting, in America, you'll find some barns that says Sea. The Rock City. Now, they're referring to the one in Tennessee, I think it's that. So that's right, it's in Tennessee? The Rock City? But isn't that an interesting prophecy if a Jew sees that? See the Rock City. You better get to the right Rock City. Over there in Petra. Isaiah 16:3. Take counsel, execute judgment, make thy shadow as the night in the midst of the noonday. Hide the outcasts. Now they are, they're hiding there. Beway not him that wandereth. They're out there wandering. Let mine outcast dwell with thee, Moab. That's modern day Jordan. Moab and Edom. Be thou a covert or covering. In marriage that's called coverture. If you look in Black's Law, look under coverture. And it will say the married state of a woman. Covering. Okay, be thou a covert to them from the face of the spoiler, Antichrist, for the extortioner. Oh, see, he's an extortioner. Extorts money. Is at an end. Famous words in the Bible, the end, reference to the tribulation. The spoiler ceaseth. The oppressors are consumed out of the land, and in mercy shall the throne be established, and he shall sit upon it in truth in the tabernacle of David, judging and seeking judgment and hastening righteousness. Okay, so we can see 3 and 4, tribulation. Verse 5 jumps right into the millennium. And the Bible will do that at times. It'll jump years on us. Okay, back in Jeremiah 30. Let's see, where was that? 16, 17, 17 paragraph mark, 18 paragraph mark. Did that tape kick off? Okay, we can finish this chapter probably. Thus saith the Lord, behold, I will bring again the captivity of Jacob's tents and have mercy on his dwelling places. And the city, Jerusalem, shall be builded upon her own heap, and the palace shall remain after the manner thereof. Now that's interesting, to build something on rubble. And we don't do that much here, but they do in Jerusalem. And they just keep digging down into the rubble trying to find something else. Here, you know, they dig down in the dirt, put a foundation, anything under it, you know, you got to dig it all up, something like that. But there, they just build on top of everything. Now, I don't know what cities are like. They probably build over top of them. Felipe, do you know? Do you know? Did they build over top of some of the concrete and rubble in the cities? Don't know? Well, you can see that in Jerusalem. And that's how they do the excavating. They just keep digging lower and lower and lower, finding more rubble. Okay, that was the heap 19. Out of them shall proceed thanksgiving, the voice of them that make merry, and I will multiply them, millennium, and they shall not be few, millennium. And I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small, they sure are now. Their children also shall be as aforetime, Old Testament. Their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all that oppress them. And their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governor shall proceed from the midst of them, and I will cause him to draw near, and he shall approach unto me. For who is this that engaged his heart to approach unto me, saith the Lord? And ye shall be my people, and I will be your God. Behold, the whirlwind of the Lord goeth forth with fury. Second coming, a continuing whirlwind. It shall fall with pain upon the head of the wicked. Second coming, the fierce anger of the Lord shall not return until he have done it, until he have performed the intents of his heart. In the latter days ye shall consider it. Notice the time period. Latter days. Second coming. Okay, we kind of ran through that. Any questions, comments, or we covered? Yes, sir.
I want to talk about verse 8.
Mm-hmm. Right.